Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Oh, 3 or 4 years ago, the average American probably had heard of Islam, and they probably knew vaguely what Muslims might believe, but they might not have been able to tell a Muslim from a Hindu or from a Buddhist. They might have been a little confused on these world religions. The confusion seems to have cleared up a bit since Islam has become such a major topic of conversation in the world and among Christians, but there is still some confusion, and there certainly is a lot of confusion among Muslims about what Christians believe. We're going to be asking and answering some questions that may not very often be asked or answered in all this discussion about this world religion, Islam, in the course of this hour of Issues Etc. We are coming to you live. Ron Rhodes will join us here in just a moment to talk about Islam. We are coming to you live on this Sunday evening, June the 8th. If you have a question or a comment on Islam, feel free to give us a call. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We also have an in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Feel free to use that for questions or comments as well. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Ron Rhodes is president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, based in Frisco, Texas, and he's author of the new book titled Reasoning from the Scriptures with Muslims. Ron, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks. It's good to be with you this evening.
Let's ask a question that some people perhaps, and answer this, that some people perhaps might not think about, and some people might still be curious about. That is, do Muslims and Christians worship the same God?
That is a very good question, and in fact, I've heard Christians say that yes, we do worship the same God. Other Christians say no, we don't worship the same God. So really, what's the bottom line here? I think that part of the confusion is related to the word Allah, which is the word for God among Muslims. And even if you were going to refer to God in a generic sense in Arabic lands, you'd still use the word Allah. And therefore, there are some Christians who say, well, since we worship God or Allah, it must be the same God as the God of the Bible. But that's really not correct, because Muslims, in my opinion, pour an entirely different meaning into that word than Christians do. They're two different gods altogether. Can I give you some main points here?
Please.
To begin with, Allah is not a trinity. In fact, if you even mention the word trinity to a Muslim, they may become very offended at you. They typically misunderstand the trinity, and they interpret it in terms of tritheism, or the idea that it means three gods in one God. That's not what we mean. We believe in one God, but within the unity of that one Godhead, there are three co-eternal persons, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Muslims don't believe that. They say that Allah is a singular God. Moreover, this God cannot have a son. In fact, if you speak about Jesus being the Son of God to a Muslim, they will typically take that as meaning that you believe that the Father has a female partner. And that's anathema to Muslims. Now, of course, that's anathema to Christians, too. I mean, we don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God in terms of the Father having a female partner. Rather, we believe that Jesus is eternally the Son of God. He's eternally the second person of the Trinity. He's always been the second person of the Trinity. And so I think you can see where I'm going with this. The very nature of the God of Islam is different from the nature of the God of the Bible. And you can even go further than that by talking about the attributes of Allah. Because according to Islam and according to the Quran, Allah only loves people who are perfectly obedient to Him. The contrast is that the God of the Bible loves even sinners. Romans 5:8, while we were yet sinners, God demonstrated His love toward us by having Jesus die on the cross for us. Muslims will also say that God is entirely separate from creation and you can't have a personal relationship with Him. The Bible says we can have a relationship with the God of the Bible. So I know I'm kind of rambling on here, but my point is that if you line up the attributes and the qualities of the God of Islam versus the God of the Bible, they are different point by point by point.
What is behind, and now I'm not asking about the Christian who may wrongly understand the terminology Allah, God, and kind of the generic term, but I'm talking about the culture's general understanding that, well, look, look at Christianity, look at Islam, they're similar enough, their morality seem to be somewhat similar, they must worship the same God. What is the impulse behind that conclusion?
Well, I think that's a good observation on your part. I think that it all goes back to the Old Testament. When you look at Abraham, Abraham worshipped a particular God, the true God. Now, as you know, Muslims believe that the line of promise goes from Abraham through Ishmael to the modern Arabs, whereas Christians believe the line of promise goes from Abraham through Isaac, down through the present. And the fact is that because the God of Abraham is, in both camps, in Islam and Christianity, it must be the same God. And when you trace the ethics of the two religions, they are similar in many ways. You know, trace from the Old Testament on to the future. And even Muhammad had high regard for some of the ethical principles found in the Christian scriptures. But there's a critical difference here that I want to point out to you. You see, in Islam, you have to obey the laws of Allah in order to be saved. I mean, you have to just be perfectly obedient. And even then, you can't be sure that you're saved. So it's a religion of ethics. You attain salvation by being good. Or you might look at it this way. Islam tries to take bad men and make them better by ethics. Christianity tries to take dead men and make them alive. You see, we're spiritually dead. And spiritually dead people really cannot be ethical enough to earn a relationship with God. That's why we need new life, and that only comes through Jesus Christ. So if it's just a question of ethics, yeah, Islam's got a lot of good ethics, at least in some points. There's a lot of bad ethics, too, I might point out. But the fact is that human beings are spiritually dead, and ethics will not cut it.
Another place where there seems to be quite a bit of confusion perhaps arises when Christians hear Muslims speak highly of the person of Jesus, and they'll even say, we believe in Jesus. What do they mean by that?
Well, Jesus is in the Quran, but when you look at it, he's only in 70 verses out of 6,000 verses in the Quran, so that sort of shows you where he is on the food chain, so to speak. They will speak of Jesus as a great prophet, but he is not as great a prophet as Muhammad. You see, Jesus was just a prophet to Israel. And in fact, according to Islam, there's been 124,000 prophets throughout history. And the reason Allah keeps on sending these prophets is because people need to be reminded of God's law. That's one of the reasons why Jesus came. He came to remind the Israelites of Allah's law. They will even speak about the miracles of Jesus. In fact, if you were over in Iran today, for example, and you got sick and went to a doctor, if that doctor healed you, you might hear a Muslim say, oh, doctor, you have the very breath of Jesus in you, because they believe in miracles, the miracles of Jesus. But you see, they don't interpret the miracles of Jesus the way we do. They don't think that those miracles point to Jesus' divine identity or the fact that he is the divine Messiah. Rather, he was just somehow a miracle worker. They will tell you that Jesus was not the Son of God. They will tell you that Jesus was not God in human flesh. They will also tell you that Jesus was not crucified on the cross. And basically the way they explain it is that Judas was crucified in the place of Jesus. What Allah did was he put the facial likeness of Jesus onto Judas so that people thought they were crucifying Jesus, but really it was Judas with the face of Jesus. Are you following me?
Yeah.
And so basically what we're seeing here is that every single point that Christians hold dear in regard to the person of Jesus Christ, the Muslims deny. And so I think it's very, very important that we have a clear understanding of this, because you've got a different Jesus and you've got a different God. And I might add, additionally add that this different Jesus preaches a different gospel. And I have to tell you that when you've got a different God, a different Jesus who preaches a different or counterfeit gospel, you got yourself a counterfeit salvation.
Let's talk about that gospel that the Jesus of Islam preaches when we come back from this break. Ron Rhodes is our guest, president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, based in Frisco, Texas, and author of the new book titled Reasoning from the Scriptures with Muslims. You see how it works, folks, and do not underestimate how closely these two questions are related to one another. Do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? No. That question is not fully answered until you ask the Jesus question. You see, just lining up the attributes of the triune God and Allah will highlight some differences, but it also highlights some similarities. It doesn't fully answer the question. However, Jesus says, "If you have known me, you have known the Father." He says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father," and he's speaking of the true God, "except through me." If you've got a different Jesus, a different gospel, then you do not have the true God, certainly not the triune God. This is the basic, fundamental difference between Christianity and Islam, and it really does color all of the other basic fundamental differences we'll discuss in the course of this hour. They have a different God because they have a very, very different Jesus. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. Join us if you have a question or a comment on Islam. Ron Rhodes is our guest. 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Perhaps you've heard someone say, right and wrong are all fine and good, but this is business. Is the place of business any place for Christian ethics? How does the Christian square the profit motive, the bottom line, and business competition with Christian ethics? In our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Christian Ethics in the Workplace, its authors explore these very questions and through case studies show how Christian ethics work in the workplace. You can receive your copy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. The book costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Or order online at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on this book. When you call or write, be sure to ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Christian Ethics in the Workplace, 1-800-325-3040. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking with Ron Rhodes about Islam. By the way, Islam will be one of the topics that will be discussed in depth later this month at a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 20th through the 27th, at the Schwann Center in northern Wisconsin. Now, other subjects at the seminar include presenting Christ to convinced pagans, Darwinism, pantheism, postmodernism, theological liberalism, and many more. Now, we will be broadcasting live from the seminar up in Trago, Wisconsin, with Issues Etc. regular guests Craig Parton, Rolf Preuss, George Mather, and Angus Manouge. Now, you need to register for this seminar before Friday, June the 13th. That is the cutoff date, Friday, June the 13th. So call the Schwann Center at 1-800-577-4848. And ask for information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 20th through the 27th, 1-800-577-4848. The cost of the seminar, just $229, which includes 10 lectures, 7 nights lodging, and believe it or not, all of your meals as well. 1-800-577-4848. Register before June the 13th. Or you can also find out more about this seminar on our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 20th through the 27th, at the Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin. We hope to see you there. 1-800-577-4848. Ron, let's go back to a subject you mentioned before the break, and that is, Islam teaches a different Jesus, giving a high place to this Jesus, of a great prophet in the line of prophets along with Muhammad, but you said this Jesus proclaims a different, or you even said counterfeit, gospel. What is it?
Well, it's a works gospel. In fact, all the way through the Quran, you find this emphasis on submission to Allah. In fact, the word Islam means submission to Allah, and the word Muslim means one who submits. And so it's a works-oriented salvation, but we need to go back further than that, because they also have sort of a redefinition of the problem of sin. You see, they don't believe that there is original sin. Muslims do not believe that Adam's sin affected anyone. Adam just had a minor slip-up. In fact, Muslims will define sin as being feebleness or forgetfulness. Again, that's why God has had to send 124,000 prophets throughout history to remind people of God's laws, because people tend to forget and people tend to be feeble. That's what Adam did. He just temporarily slipped up and forgot about God's law, but then he got back on track and his sin didn't affect anybody. Muslims believe that people have the ability to fully obey Allah in their own strength, and that there are two angels standing on your shoulder, as it were, and they're recording angels. One of the angels writes down all of your good deeds, and one of the angels writes down all of your bad deeds. And can you guess which one's more busy? I think the one that's writing down the bad deeds is probably the more busy one. But here's something that's very important, Todd. You know, because of the fact that they don't believe in original sin, and they don't believe that human beings are fallen in sin, they don't have any kind of atonement. There's no atonement that is necessary according to Islamic theology. And that means, really, when you look at it, there's no objective basis for forgiveness. And you can see how that's different with Christianity. You see, Jesus died on the cross for us, and there's an objective basis for the Father to forgive us of our sins when we trust in Christ. But Muslims do not have that. Rather, Muslims are simply expected to obey Allah's laws, and if you're good enough, maybe Allah will let you into paradise at the end of time.
So sin is basically, according to Islamic understanding, a deficit in the human being of knowledge and ability, but it is an entirely repairable deficit. In other words, you said that man is believed to have full capacity to live obediently before Allah in all of his way. He doesn't do it, but he has full capacity to do that. This leads to the conclusion, it seems, that if man goes to heaven, he really gets all the credit. He earned his way into heaven, according to Islam.
Well, ultimately, you would think so. I think that there's another element that should be brought into the picture, and that is the arbitrariness of Allah. What I mean by that is that Allah can decide not to let you in if he doesn't want to. Even if you've done a pretty good job of obeying God's law, Allah may not let you in anyway. And this has to do with the all-sovereign will of Allah. Allah can do whatever he wants. Sometimes he does good. Sometimes he does evil. Sometimes he shows mercy. Sometimes he is very cruel. Allah has the capability of being on both sides, as it were. And so this is one of the reasons why no Muslim has any assurance of salvation in terms of an objective basis of that salvation. Rather, they just hope that after they've done their best to obey Allah's law, that Allah's in a real good mood at the end and will let them in. Nevertheless, what you said is true. You know, when a person does make it in, it is largely based on the fact that they were successful in obeying God's law. But you know something I have found out in talking to different Muslims? Most Muslims know that they're failing all over the place in obeying God. And that's one of the things I think that opens up the opportunity for us to talk to them about, because every one of us has this burden that's on us. We all have this burden that puts pressure on us in terms of us knowing that we're not living up to what we're supposed to be living up to. And, you know, we can probably talk about this later on in the show, but this definitely presents an opportunity for the Christian.
So with about a minute here before we go to another break, it's you can hardly call this salvation in the same Christian sense, that we are saved from anything. This is more like basically earning your points and seeing whether or not at the end Allah will let you in. But what does then it look like at the end for the Muslim? What does the afterlife, if you will, look like for them?
Well, if you end up in paradise, paradise is said to be a very sensual place. In fact, men are said to have some 72 beautiful virgin maidens at their disposal. They can drink all the wine they want, and this wine does not give you a hangover. There is beautiful nature all around. In fact, you can walk under a tree so large that it would take you 100 years to get out from under its shade just by walking. And so it's a very sensual place, but you know what? There's not a whole lot about the women there. Makes you wonder, you know, how come the men have 72 virgin maidens, but there's no mention of women having any kind of, you know, glorious afterlife like that? So I think it's a little bit slanted when you look at it. Furthermore, of course, the Christian, you know, view of heaven is that we look forward to being with God himself face to face. That's going to be the wonder of true heaven.
We're talking with Ron Rhodes of Reasoning from the Scriptures about Islam. Now, Ron is president of Reasoning from the Scriptures, and you can check out their website by visiting first our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org. There's a section there titled Links with Regular Guests. Click on that, and as you scroll down, you'll find a direct link to Ron Rhodes and Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries. You can even purchase Ron's new book called Reasoning from the Scriptures with Muslims on his website. Just go to ours first to get there. Or if you'd like to write Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, call our Issues Etc. resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, and we'll give you the phone number and the mailing address for Ron Rhodes and Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries. That automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172. Okay, we're halfway through this first hour on Islam, and one thing is puzzling me. Does the average Muslim, Ron had mentioned that the average Muslim realizes that he is falling short of the kind of obedience that is demanded by his religion. He's aware, if you will, of his sin. Does the average Muslim believe he's going to paradise, or does he believe he isn't? It makes a big difference, you know, especially if you're going to dialogue, or better yet, witness to a Muslim who says, I know I fail, and you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm going to fail in the end and end up not in paradise, but in punishment. There's an opportunity to bring in the perfect obedience of Jesus Christ.
What should a Christian do when he finds out about mismanagement of funds at work? How should you deal with a supervisor who always takes credit for your work? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Christian Ethics in the Workplace. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section. Christian Ethics in the Workplace is written by a theologian, an executive, and a business school professor. In this book, you'll find out how to prevent corporate scandals like Enron, Global Crossing, and WorldCom. The cost is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Christian Ethics in the Workplace, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. For more information, Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined by Craig Parton. Craig will be one of the speakers at a Confessional Christian Worldview seminar coming up on June 20th through the 27th at the Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin. Craig, tell us about your lecture entitled Defending the Biblical Worldview.
Sure, Todd. This particular seminar looks at apologetics and why Lutherans and all Christians ought to be involved in the apologetical task. The various things that we'll be looking at during the time of the seminar will be defending the defense of the faith. In other words, an apologetic for apologetics. What is apologetics? Why do we need to be about it? What is the about the contemporary situation that demands that we give a defense for the reason, for the hope that is within us? We look at the three centuries of secularism and why so many Christians are not involved in the defense of the faith and why that has been historically, and why the contemporary situation cries out for Christians to be able to give a reason for the hope that is within them. and what those evidences actually are. We'll actually go through the historical legal evidences. As a trial lawyer, I'm going to present why lawyers have been historically attracted to the Christian faith. What is it about the evidences that have attracted lawyers, and how to use those evidences effectively with the non-Christian? We'll look at non-Christian viewpoints. We'll also look at Lutherans and the defense of the faith, why they historically have not been involved in apologetics, but why they have such a solid theology that should allow them to be in the forefront of the apologetical task.
That's Craig Parton, one of our speakers at a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 20th through the 27th at the beautiful Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin, about 2 hours from Minneapolis. Now, for more information, call the Schwann Center at 1-800-577-4848. That's 1-800-577-4848, or go to our website at issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 20th through the 27th in Trago, Wisconsin. Again, that number, 1-800-577-4848. The cost of the seminar is $229 for 19 meals and 7 nights lodging. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June 20th through the 27th in Trago, Wisconsin, or call 1-800-577-4848. 1-800-577-4848. Folks, Father's Day is this right? Just 1 week away, coming up June the 15th. And I have a great Father's Day gift for your dad. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, titled Christian Ethics in the Workplace. Now, the book is written by a theologian, a businessman, and a business school professor. The cost of the book is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Now, if you want it before Father's Day, you might want to request premium shipping when you order the book. It's called Christian Ethics in the Workplace. Call Concordia Publishing House tomorrow during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Christian Ethics in the Workplace. That number again, 1-800-325-3040, or you can order the book online tonight. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on Christian Ethics in the Workplace, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, issuesetc.org. Ron Rhodes is our guest. Islam is our topic. If you'd like to join us, we have a phone number, too. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. Ron, answer the question I raised before the break. Does the average Muslim have any real confidence of being rewarded with paradise in the afterlife?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think that the average Muslim has any kind of an assurance. It's more of a hope. But it's a hope against all odds, really. In fact, there's only one way to have an assurance of salvation, and that's by dying in the cause of Allah. In fact, that's one of the reasons why you see so many martyrs today for the cause of Allah. The only way you can be sure of going directly to paradise is if you die in serving Allah. If you follow the normal route of just trying to be obedient to Allah, then you may or may not succeed. Basically, what Muslims teach is that at the end of time, those different notes written down by the two recording angels will be weighed on the infinite scale of justice. I don't know if you can just picture a scale in your mind and putting one set of notes on one side and the other set on the other side. And whichever one weighs the most is where you're going to end up. If you have more good deeds, then Allah may let you into paradise. But if you have more bad deeds, then your doom is pretty well set.
I want to come back to that when we talk in a few minutes about witnessing tips, evangelization tips with Muslims. But first, one more question on the authority that is for every Muslim, kind of the heart and center, the beating heart of their faith, and that is the Quran. Compare the Bible and the Quran in a general sense.
Well, you know, we could spend the rest of the hour talking about the Quran and the Bible, but just to give you a quick overview, Muslims believe that God has given revelation in the Psalms of David and in the writings of Moses, the Torah, and in the Gospels, and in the Quran. And the greatest of these is the Quran. It is the final, ultimate revelation given by Allah. Therefore, if there's any contradiction, certainly you should go with what the Quran has to say. The problem is that the Bible, even though Muhammad commended the reading of the Bible in the Quran, the reality is the Bible contradicts the Quran at many points. And so that puts the Muslim in a difficulty. You know, the Quran says that the Bible is good, that the reading of the Bible is to be commended, but the Bible actually contradicts the Quran at many points. So you see the difficulty, don't you? What Muslims basically do in trying to explain their way out of this situation is to say that the Bible has been changed, that the Bible that was originally written is not the Bible we have today. The Christians changed the Bible or the New Testament early on by sticking in doctrines like the Trinity and Jesus being the Son of God. And then back in the Old Testament, the Jews changed the Old Testament to the effect that the line of promise was through Isaac and not Ishmael. So basically, whenever there's a contradiction, the Muslim will say that the Bible has been changed. So if you're going to do apologetics with the Muslim, this is one of the things you need to spend some time on, proving that the Bible is reliable and proving that the Quran is not reliable.
So it's not really true that the Bible, the Christian scriptures of Old and New Testament, are in any sense a real solid authority for the Muslim. They will always resort to the Quran when a conflict arises.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, that's true most of the time, but whenever they can find a verse that supports their cause from the Bible, they're going to really go after that verse. Just to give you a quick example, you know that prophecy back in Deuteronomy 18 that talks about the coming of a greater prophet? Well, Muslims love that verse because they believe that that's a prophecy of Muhammad. The greater prophet was Muhammad. And as well, they like that verse where Jesus is talking in John 14 through 16, where Jesus talks about the other comforter who is coming. And Muslims say, well, there you have it. Jesus is prophesying the coming of Muhammad because Muhammad is the other comforter. So whenever Muslims find a verse that they think fits their theology, they latch onto it and they say it's authoritative. But most of the time, they don't do that simply because the Bible disputes Islamic doctrine at so many different points. And for that reason, the Muslims will typically say that at those points, the Bible is in error and is not to be trusted.
One other question on the Quran. Does the average Muslim know his own book?
Well, a great number of Muslims do not, simply because Muslims believe that intrinsic to the Quran itself is the Arabic language. Muslims believe that the original Quran is up in heaven by Allah's side, and it's written in Arabic. And then piece by piece, over about a 22-year period, the angel Gabriel allegedly brought these words, these Arabic words from heaven, down to Muhammad, and Muhammad recorded the Quran on earth. And so Muslims believe that the Arabic language itself is intrinsic to the Quran. Now here's where the problem is. Only about 20% of the world's Muslims speak Arabic. And for those non-Arabic Muslims, that poses a problem. What do you do? What do English-speaking Muslims do? Well, there is a translation called The Meaning of the Glorious Quran. And I want you to notice, they don't just call it the Quran, but the meaning of the glorious Quran, because they don't think that it can actually be translated. You can only communicate in a loose sense what the meaning of it is. And even then, there's many Muslims that do not know any more than the basic confession. That is, that there's one God named Allah and that Muhammad is his prophet. Beyond that, there are many Muslims who are ignorant of what the Quran teaches.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment on Islam, give us a call at 1-800-730-2727. We will give Muslim callers the top priority, 1-800-730-2727. Martin is calling from Kansas City. Martin, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. It's good to be on your show, Ron. I really like your show. Or, Todd, I'm sorry. I had a question. I was wondering, is jihad part of the five pillars of Islam?
The five pillars refer to how to be a good Muslim, and the five pillars are the creed, the reciting of the creed, saying your prayers five times a day, giving alms, fasting during the month of Ramadan, and then the pilgrimage. And, of course, that pilgrimage is like the capstone. It's the final, ultimate thing. It's where you actually go before Allah, allegedly. And so those are the five pillars. Certainly there are other beliefs that that Muslims hold to, but those are the five principal beliefs.
So if someone says one of the basic beliefs of Islam is the jihad, they would really have to presuppose a sixth pillar, if you will.
Well, yeah, and I should mention, to be fair to Muslims in America, there are different views of jihad. Not all Muslims interpret it as being a holy war in terms of, you know, taking up arms and engaging in terrorist activities. In fact, Muslims talk about a greater jihad and a lesser jihad, and they say that the greater jihad has to do with the striving in your heart against the vices that keep you away from Allah. That's the hardest thing. That's why it's called the greater jihad. The word jihad literally means struggle. So it's an inner struggle against the vices in the human heart. The lesser jihad is the taking up of arms after Islam has been attacked in some way, or a perception of being attacked. Of course, some of the extremists in different parts of the world attack the United States because their perception is that the United States has done them wrong. And so they're responding by jihad. But many American Muslims do not go along with what those terrorist Muslims have done in their interpretation of jihad. So they don't all see it the same.
Martin, thank you for the call. Stefan is calling from Kent, Ohio, listening on WHK. Stefan, we're near a break. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi. I was just wondering, like, what are you basing your information on? Like, have you read the Quran yourself? Or
yes, I have.
You have Muslim friends or...
Both. I've spoken with Muslims. I've read the Quran. Not only that, but I read what the Muslim apologists are teaching Muslims. Did you know that there are Muslim apologists?
So there are people who defend the Muslim faith.
Yes, there are. There are Muslims who are teaching other Muslims how to point out pitfalls in the Bible, how to point out that Jesus is not God. And I've got to tell you that the primary argumentation that Muslim apologists are using are almost identical, point by point, to Jehovah's Witness arguments against the deity of Christ. And in fact, I believe that some of the Muslim apologists are getting their material from Jehovah's Witnesses, at least in terms of who Jesus is. So in answer to the caller's question, yes, I have read the Quran, have spoken with many Muslims, have read the apologetic literature, as well as other books. I've read a great deal of the Hadith, or the tradition of Islam. It's impossible to read all of it because there's just far too much of it. But certainly I have read a representative sampling of it to understand it.
Ron Rhodes is our guest. We're talking about Islam. Next week on the program, we'll be discussing the doctrine of the Trinity with Dr. Ken Sherb of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. How important is this doctrine, the Trinity? Is it a man-made teaching? Is belief in the Trinity unthinkable? We'll talk about it next week on Issues, Etc., with Dr. Ken Sherb. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing on the program for the rest of June, check out our website, issuesetc.org. While you're there, be sure to read several articles we have posted there on the subject of Islam. The web address again, issuesetc.org. If you have a question or comment on Islam, as our conversation continues, give us a call, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or email at issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Darwinism, pantheism, utopianism, postmodernism. There are many popular worldviews today. Some are obvious, some are not. But they all whittle away at the Christian faith. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Join me and Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton, Rolf Preuss, George Mather, and Angus Manoogian for a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar June 20th through the 27th at the Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin. The cost is only $229, and this includes the seminar, 7 nights lodging, and all your meals. Now, for more information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June 20th through the 27th in northern Wisconsin, call the Schwann Center at 1-800-577-4848, 1-800-577-4848, or check out our website, issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find information on this seminar. I hope to see you there. If you'd like a free tape of this hour and the next hour's internet-only broadcast on Islam with Ron Rhodes, you know, it would be a great tape to give to a Muslim friend, or perhaps to listen to again so that you can better dialogue with Muslims. Contact the local Lutheran church sponsor that sponsors Issues Etc., and they'll send you a free cassette of today's program. Now get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. Ron Rhodes is our guest. We're talking about Islam. Ron, before we take some more phone calls, you have some basic tips in your book on dialoguing and witnessing to Muslims. Give us a few.
Okay, well, of course, as I said earlier, one of the primary emphases of Islam is that you should submit to Allah. One of the things I like to point out to Muslims is Jesus surely is one who submitted to the Father. In fact, he submitted all the way to the cross. If you look at the entire life of Jesus Christ, it was a life of submission, wasn't it? And so this is something I bring up to help the Muslim understand Jesus in Quranic terms, in terms of submission. I also like to point out that, you know, there's a quotation or at least a allusion to the story in Genesis 22 where Abraham sacrificed his son. That's actually quoted in the Quran. And what's interesting is that the two words that are brought up in the Quran are ransom and sacrifice. Now, you see where I'm going with this, don't you? Those are the same two words used of Jesus at the cross, ransom and sacrifice. And what I like to point out to the Muslim is that Jesus was sacrificed on the cross as a ransom to buy us out of sin and to purchase our redemption. And basically what I'm doing there is I'm talking in terms that the Muslim can understand. Now, most important, I help Muslims to understand the love of God, because this is something that the Muslim does not know. The Muslim is used to hearing about Allah, who loves people who are perfectly obedient, but they don't hear about a God who loves even sinners. And for that reason, I often ask Muslims to read through, as an example, the Gospel of Luke. I say that because Muslims love stories, and the Gospel of Luke is full of good stories that illustrate the good news about Jesus Christ and the love of God. And then once they read the Gospel of Luke, I sit down and I talk with them about what it means. Now, these are just a couple of the tips that I suggest to people to use. There are many more that are discussed in the book, but these are some of the more important ones.
Let's go back to the phones. Bill is calling from Kansas City, listening on KCCV. Bill, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Excellent. I wanted to, as an American Muslim, I was excited to, you know, come to a radio station that's actually talking about Islam and Christianity. I think that's really cool. Unfortunately, though, it would have been nice if you would have had a Muslim speaker talking about Islam. Even Ron may have good intentions and everything, but a lot of what Ron says is maybe half truth or distorted or not really in an Islamic view.
Give me an example, then. Because I've talked to many Muslims who have converted who tell me that this is precisely what they believed.
No, I mean, you said Muslims don't understand the Quran.
I said many Muslims do not, who do not speak Arabic and who choose not to read a non-Arabic version.
Right, but even non-Arabic speaking Muslims like myself still have a lot of Arabic friends. My children can speak Arabic. My father speaks Arabic.
Well, that's great. That's great if you do. But, you know, a great many Muslims do not have that kind of a situation.
I think Muslims, as general of them, understand the Quran. When it comes to, like, love of God, you said Muslims don't understand the love of God. There's so many stories about God, His mercy, His love. For example, there was a child by fire. The mother moved the child away from the fire so it doesn't get burned. And the lady said, "Oh, Muhammad, I'm a mother, and I do not wish my son to get burned. Doesn't Allah love us more?"
Bill, I wanted to ask you a question before I let you go. You talked about the love of God as revealed, at least as you see it, through the Islamic faith. Do you think that Christians and Muslims agree on how a person is made right with God?
Well, for most of them, it's easy. God's merciful. He's loving. He created us to show us how merciful He is. So if we make a mistake, we count on Him to forgive us. We feel bad for what we've done. We say, "Oh, God, please forgive us."
Why would He forgive you? I mean, is there an objective reason
why
God would forgive you?
He created mankind to show us how merciful He is, that He can be merciful to us. But we need to go to Him, Him alone. If He can do this, His mercy is endless. God says, "The day I created mercy, I chopped it into 100 parts. 1% of one part I send to earth. And with that one part, a mother loves her child. Animals take care of each other. People love each other with that one part. The other 99% I'm saving for the day of judgment for those who come straight to me. I have it for them."
Bill, thank you very much for the call. I guess the question that kind of lingers here then, Ron, is completely atypical for what you might hear from Muslims. I'm sure you've heard it before. How do you respond?
Well, I respond by pointing out that of the numerous Muslims that I've interacted with, who have come to understand what the love of God really is from the Christian scriptures, it's like night and day. Now, this individual talked about mercy, and I think that some of the stuff he was quoting was probably from tradition and not the Quran. And there's a great deal of debate as to which traditions are reliable and which traditions are not reliable. And even Muslim scholars will admit that a great deal of what passes for tradition is not originally from Muhammad himself. But the point I will say is that the love of God, understanding the love of God for sinners for the first time in their lives, was what caused them to convert to Christianity. One example would be one Muslim that I interacted with who was reading the Gospels, and he came across that statement that Jesus makes from the cross. And Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And that Muslim converted at that point because for the first time in his life he understood what the love of God is. Jesus must be God, this Muslim reasoned, because nobody could express that kind of love unless it were from God himself. And so for the first time in his life, this person understood not only that God is love, but that Jesus is God. And it was a liberating experience for him. Now, the other point I would make is that Christianity has an objective basis for forgiveness. Ultimately, if Allah forgives somebody for their sin, he has no objective basis because there is no atonement. And I know that some Muslims may want to resist this idea, but the fact of the matter is, in Islamic literature, God is absolutely sovereign. Sometimes He can be loving, sometimes He can be cruel. This is what the Muslims teach.
Got about 20 seconds here, Ron.
Okay. Well, I basically said what I wanted to say. I guess the point to emphasize is that the love of God may be mentioned on occasion in the Quran, but it's all throughout the Bible in terms of loving sinners and not just those who obey Allah. And so I think anybody who studies it objectively will see the difference.
Ron Rhodes, we're talking about Islam. Folks, we will be continuing this discussion on Islam live in the next hour on the Internet. You can join us by going to our website, issuesetc.org. When you get there, there's a worldwide KFUO logo. Click on that and you'll be able to hear the next Internet-only hour as we continue this conversation on Islam. issuesetc.org. We'll also be taking your phone calls for Ron Rhodes in the next hour at 1-800-730-2727. We will let you stay on the line to hear the response to your question or your comment. 1-800-730-2727. We'll also take your email, our address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best callers in the next hour will receive a complimentary copy of Ron's new book called Reasoning from the Scriptures, with Muslims. 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Sunday evening, June the 8th. Write this number down. Give us a call in the next hour, 1-800-730-2727. If you're getting a busy signal, keep trying. We'll be freeing up phones as soon as we come back with Ron Rhodes for another hour talking about Islam. 1-800-730-2727. That email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. 1-800-730-2727. You see, the objective reason why God does love even his enemies, even rebellious sinners, even those who have adamantly turned away, which Scripture says is all of us, the objective reason is that man, who is also God, more than a prophet, indeed the one who sent the prophets of old, Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, hanging on a cross for the forgiveness of sins. That is the shape of God's love for you. Be you a Christian, an unbeliever, a Muslim, the shape of God's love for you, because we are all sinners for whom Jesus died, is a cross-shaped love. It is the forgiveness of sins. It is not an arbitrary judgment of mercy at the end of time. It is God's firm, confident, and unwavering judgment made against his Son, where he punished your sins in Christ and proclaimed you innocent and forgiven for Jesus' sake. That is the love of God. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.